This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Aftershock Central Podcast returns. Martin, Jack, and Ronnie back at the helm. How are you fellas doing? We haven't recorded in like a month and a half.
That's what I'm saying.
What are you talking about? We just released an episode last week.
Well, yeah, that's last week. We haven't recorded since March. Shame on us.
Well,
shame on us. That's all I gotta say.
Shame.
Isn't that a song? Oh my god, this episode is gonna be full of songs.
It is.
What's a song? Shame, shame, shame. Who sings that?
Yep.
It's like a 50s song. Anyways, I'm not singing on this podcast.
Yes.
I have terrible.
You just sang it.
No, I didn't.
You just karaoke'd us.
You just got karaoke'd. Anyways, we're back. We're back. We talked to Joe. Joe's like, you guys can't leave. You can't leave me. So we said, you're right, Joe. We suck. We're gonna start recording again. So that's what we're doing. I hope everyone listening listened to the panel last week. Jack, you weren't at C2E2. Did you listen to the panel?
Of course.
Okay, good. I was about to say, shame on you.
But I was front row at SCCC like 2 weeks before that.
Well, I was front row.
At both.
At both.
That's commitment.
Hey, Ronnie.
Yes?
How was the Aftershock panel?
It was... I was absent.
Oh no, that was Ronnie's same answer regarding the Marvel panel on the Ultimate podcast.
Yep.
Well, I chose not to do the Marvel one in place of a different panel. This panel, I chose to eat omelets, and then parking got me.
See, that's
so
what
I
happened.
Was late.
He's like, "Oh, it's no big deal. I have a valet. I'll get there in time."
Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
He didn't even make it.
So what panel?
Yeah, I got there when you guys were.
Yeah, you got
there. Which panels did you go to?
He went to the Valiant panels.
Podcast you're not on.
Correct.
That's correct.
Anyway.
Actually, I think I went to the bar that night, actually.
That's true. That did happen.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of that was happening. The pictures.
There were some great pictures. I think I was still at the bar Sunday morning at the con. It was pretty awesome. Anyways, yeah, so Ronnie missed the panel. It's okay. I recorded it. And Joe was very mad at you. He said, "Where's Ronnie? We can't start without Ronnie." And I said, "Just forget him." He told me he hates Aftershock.
He's been deleted.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, the panel was awesome. I took Nick to the panel from the Nerd Legion podcast. He's a good boy, unlike Ronnie.
Mm-hmm.
I took Bill Bomer from the Geek Brunch podcast to the Aftershock panel.
Now, does Nick read Aftershock?
He does. Matter of fact, he and I, see, if you listen to our very own podcast, you would know this, Jack. He and I took over this podcast one time because he bought a bunch of the number ones, and so we had to talk about them.
Yeah, you need to bring him on. I've never podcast with him.
Oh, shame on you! Yes, I got to do it. I'll bring him on. I'll bring him on. He's the thing is, he's a trade waiter, right? So he's always going to be behind. Yeah.
Or a digital sale waiter.
Or a digital sale waiter. Digital sale waiter. He was a little upset about the sale because I think it was only number one issues. But he did pick them up at my suggestion because he and I were talking during Nerd Legion one day. And he really dug them. He really, really dug them. So that's a plus. You know, that's what we're here for. We're here to make people buy stuff.
I think... I think he bought the last issue of Rough Riders, the first season of it.
Yeah, you might be right.
That week, and that was like the first time in like 3,000 comics that he paid full price for it.
Wow.
I remember him talking about that.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So since we haven't recorded in quite a while, we're going to be talking about quite a few books today. Four for sure. But I do want to kick off with a fifth that we decided immediately before I hit record. Because Jackpot number 5 came out last week, right, Ronnie?
Yes.
Last week.
This week.
This week.
Or whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah. Last week. It's Sunday. It's a new week. And first of all, you were right, Ronnie. I totally missed the fact that Ray Fox writes it.
Mm-hmm.
Who happened to be at the con.
Mm-hmm.
Who I happened to talk to about all kinds of things, except Jackpot.
Yes.
This book is ending, because, you say.
Yes.
So this is why we're talking about this. Because I said, hey, did anybody read Jackpot number 5?
Well, hold on.
Ronnie had read it.
How's it ending if the very last page says to be continued?
So, okay, here we go. Number one, it says to be continued at the end. So if it's ending, that's going to make me a little upset. Because I think between 4 and 5, it's been a couple months, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So that makes me a little upset right now. Number two, if it's ending, WTF, Ray Fox, what is going on with this book? Because it doesn't end with any kind of resolution. So we need to figure out, do I need to be mad at Ronnie for making me angry that this book is ending? Or do I need to be mad at Ray Fox for ending this book the way that this book ended?
Probably C, all of the above.
C, all of the above. So I should be mad at Joe for no reason, is what you're saying.
No, I'm saying both A and B. Be mad at me and Ray Fox.
Well, now hold on. Maybe he's planning to continue the story. They just don't have a date set yet. Sort of the Southern Bastards kind of schedule. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Possible. Here we go, Ronnie. I have decided the right answer is A. I'm going to be mad at Ronnie for getting me all upset when Jackpot number 6 comes out June 21st.
Okay.
Now I can. I'll no longer be angry. Now I'm happy again. Did you like this issue, Ronnie?
Oh, it is scheduled June 21st.
Yep.
After each issue, it seems like a disconnect. So I don't know if that's just how the story goes, or I don't. It took me a minute to get my teeth back into it because. How long it's been since the previous issue.
Yeah, that's a little upsetting. I mean, it's been...
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's been at least 2 months between 4 and 5. And now it's going to be another 2 months between 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
That might work with some stories, but I think with this one, this is like one of those perfect trade stories.
Yeah.
Because it almost feels like there's just enough... in each issue to keep you interested, but the way that each one ends and the next one begins makes little sense without having the previous one fresh in mind.
Correct.
And I mean, it took me getting through half of this issue to really remember what happened in the previous one. When Dominique is talking to, I don't even know who the blonde girl's name is. I don't know if they ever named her. And they're going through all like the different possible futures and worlds and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, they kind of went to this weird extra dimensional place at the end of 4, and the whole thing with the yacht, remember that they were in the yacht and that guy was chasing them, and
yeah.
And it took me halfway through this to remember any of that.
Yep.
So I don't know if that's my bad or if that's the writer's bad. But, this feels like a book that shouldn't be as delayed as it is. And I'm sure there's a good reason for it.
Yeah.
But, it was interesting. I wish by issue 5 I knew what the hell was going on.
Right.
That's all.
Agreed.
I'm not going to ruin any more of it because I know Jack hasn't read it. I don't want to ruin it for Jack. Oh, he's flipping pages. He might be reading it right now.
Of course I've read it. You think I'd come on a podcast and not read the comics?
Look at that professionalism.
Professional.
Hasn't this whole arc been about the progression of Dominique?
Yes.
So it starts where she's just totally clueless, and she's slowly gaining her powers and figuring out her powers and learning that this is a little bit bigger than just her. And then it culminates in this issue, which is about her becoming, like, godlike, right?
Correct.
So it seems like a sort of classic, I don't know, a little bit different take on it, like a classic origin.
Which, that's fine. I totally get that. But what I'm saying is, because of the breaks in between each issue,
right,
it's hard to follow what's happening.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you lose track of it.
And, I mean, the amount of information that was thrown at you this issue,
right,
was like, whoa, what the hell? Like, where did all of this come from? Because, I mean, you get, like, a story of the multiverse and all these deities and Dominique being, like, the ultimate deity. I mean, it was cool.
Deities.
It was cool, but I don't know. It just, it left me a little discombobulated, I guess you would say.
Well, I mean, if you're reading something like Southern Bastards, you got like 6 or 7 months in between issues sometimes. Well,
that's why I don't read garbage.
Southern Bastards is a great book.
Sure it is.
But 2 months is nothing.
Dude, I live in the South. You live in the South. I don't need to read a comic about it. You just go outside and see a bunch of Southern Bastards.
Yeah, I got them next door to me.
Anyways, no, I see what you're saying. Southern Bastards is not terrible, by the way. I just like to say that.
Yeah, but I've heard that people say that one of the reasons they like the rebirth bi-monthlies for that reason, that the story is just constantly in their head and they don't have time to sort of forget about what's going on.
Yep, I love it. It's awesome. But the problem is not everybody can do that. You can't do that.
It's an aggressive schedule.
Yeah. You were saying
talking really? About every other thing except for Aftershock.
He just wants to do a DC podcast, I think. And that's what I think. Anyway.
He doesn't like Batman, so.
God. We should no longer be friends.
Next, I want to talk about Black Mask.
Oh, Lord.
Black Mask, eh? Well, your buddy Rosenberg he started at Black Mask. Now he's about to be the Marvel Big Shot, so.
See how easy it is to, like, derail a conversation in this podcast?
Well, that's okay, because Black Mask's publication schedule is about the same as on par with Images.
Oh, snap.
No, it's not. No, what?
Yes.
Black Mask, that's true.
It might
Black
be worse
Mask
than Image.
Worse.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Mask is. But I think the only one that's somewhat timely is Black.
Black, and then there's another one, but
yeah, the rest of them know. Are like twice a year, maybe.
Yeah.
Now I will say this though: I think one of the things I like that Aftershock has done is because all these a lot of these independent titles, once they get past one arc, it seems like it's inevitable that the release schedule just gets ridiculous, and they've ended a lot of these pretty after about an arc or two.
Mm-hmm.
Or they've sort of stopped them and restarted them. And I think that's probably a good thing to do. Like, just go ahead and resolve the story instead of having it linger and just fade into, you know, nothing. Like we do with our Image books and Black Mask books.
Yes. I mean, I think at least for an arc, you should have a steady schedule, right? Like what Saga does. And I hate talking about Saga because that is a book that I hate. Truly and honestly, I don't like that book. But they have a good schedule, right? So when the arc is actually going, they publish it pretty much monthly. And then they take like the 6 month hiatus or whatever it is, right? And then they come back. And so you're bound to have a story that you enjoy coming out on a regular schedule when you can keep up with the story and actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know?
But the difference is Saga is a top seller as far as independent titles go.
I get that. That's
so they have motivation to make sure it gets out there. Whereas these other books, people kind of do it on the side, and there's other things that interfere. So I'm just saying, if you end it early before it has time to sort of fade out, and I think that's sort of a good approach.
And again, I get that. But it's like Image. So if you pitch Image a book, you know, Rodney was just making fun of the release schedule. That's fine. But number one, Image has nothing to do with when you're putting your books out.
Right.
That's all up to the creator.
Right.
The creator's responsible for writing, finding an artist, finding the colorist, getting the book printed, getting the marketing done. Image doesn't do any of that.
Yeah.
Okay. But at the same time, when you slap their penis on it, that's right. That's all you gotta do. Just slap that penis on the front, the upside down penis. But the good thing about Image is when you pitch them a book, you need to pitch them a full arc. Okay, they're not gonna agree to put it out if you don't have an arc to put out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if scheduling conflicts happen afterwards, again, not necessarily Image's fault.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not like entirely familiar with the way that the inners of Aftershock works, but from my understanding of things, I mean, something like Jackpot having such a weird schedule is not necessarily Aftershock's fault. Now, a book like Black Eyed Kids, yeah, I mean, that's Joe's book, right? So if it's late, it's Joe's bad. Matter of fact, we should talk about that when we get to that book, because there's a letter at the end of the issue. I don't know. I wish, because the books are, you know, low sellers, I think it's extremely important for all the books to at least be out every 4 to 6 weeks, right, in between issues, and not have such a long break, unless you're doing a break for the like in between arcs, right? Like Insects mm-hmm. does that. I think Animosity's on that now, right? The arc is done.
In between arcs, it's understandable.
Sure, sure. But within an arc, I mean, the book's got to be put out on time. No question about it. So that's all. That's all I wanted to say. We talked about Jackpot way too much. I didn't even want to talk about it. I just wanted to be angry for like 5 minutes.
Right, but it's hard for me to be upset at Aftershock for it, because it's like every independent publisher suffers the same thing, and it's because everybody's has contracts with Marvel or DC, and they're, you know, married to that, and they have to sort of do this stuff on the side, and it always suffers with independent titles, doesn't it? I mean, it seems like it's always a constant theme.
Not everybody has Marvel or DC contracts.
That's true.
Yeah.
But even then, if as a creator, if I agreed to put out a book, I mean, it might just be my personality type, but if I tell you, hey, I want to put out whatever book it is, Joe Blow's Island Nation, I don't know, I just made that up.
The Adventures of Drunk Dad.
The Adventures of Drunk Dad, okay?
I'm not buying that.
You are buying that. Okay, but if I tell you I'm going to do that, I'm going to do 4 issues.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I'll probably have them all written before you even put them out. But, like, you know, I'm going to commit myself to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I know not everybody works the same way, okay? And I'm not in the comic book industry, so I can't say, oh, well, you know, somebody's listening probably. Like, they're like, oh, well, if Marvel offered you, you know, whatever to write Moon Knight, you'd jump all over that. You're damn right I would jump all over that, number one. But number two, I would make sure that I fulfill all my commitments.
Yeah, but you're filling your commitments, but your writer all of a sudden started... I mean, I'm sorry, your artist all of a sudden started doing art for Moon Knight. And now he doesn't have time to get to your book or your colorist or whatever. So okay. Now what do you do?
Well, then I need to find a replacement.
Yeah, because no matter how big or small the publisher is, it still has your name on it, right?
That's right.
But that never... I can't remember many independent titles that switch artists, like, just right in the middle like that. Usually it's the same writer and artist through the duration.
Well, I think that's just because you're used to reading Walking a lot Dead? Of Image books.
Oh, Walking Dead switched artists?
Yeah, but that's like...
Right in the middle?
That's like hundreds of issues, though.
Okay, I mean, it doesn't matter. Marvel and DC switch artists every few issues. And that's not indie. Granted, they're doing it to keep up with bi-weekly schedule sometimes, but...
Right.
I mean, it's not weird to do.
But they also have a cast of writers that they can shuffle up whenever they want to, and do that from sort of a managerial level, where if you're just a writer and an artist that have decided to run on a book, and now all of a sudden you're going to say, oh, sorry, I'm going to cut my writer, my artist out of this and bring on somebody new on your own, that's a big task.
Well, I mean, if your artist can't do it, then your artist can't do it. So, I mean, do you let the story stay? It goes back to what I just said with the jackpot thing.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I put out my book, you know, 3 times a year instead of 6? No, I want to put my book out 6 times a year. Because people that are reading my book, that's what they expect. You see what I'm saying? I don't want to be known. I'm talking like I'm actually like a comic book writer. I don't want to be known as, oh, well, that Martin Ferretti guy, you know. Bleeding Cool loves to talk shit about people. Here comes the Bleeding Cool article. Martin Ferretti's, what do we call it? Drunk Story of Drunk Dad. Delayed another month. You know, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if I'm a younger artist. I know Aftershock
new and
has
upcoming.
Like, yeah, an uppercomer. I know Aftershock uses big name writers and artists, right? So that might not affect some of those guys as much. Mm-hmm. But like, if I'm a new guy, right? Like you were talking about Black Mask. If I'm a new guy working at Black Mask, I want to make damn sure that I'm putting out the best books that I can on time, because maybe then I can be picked up by somebody else. Okay, like Rosenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's writing what, 3 books for Marvel?
Yeah. And that's about right around the time his Black Mask stuff, you know, fizzled out.
Sure. Sure. No, and that's fine. You know? If he feels like it pays him enough that that's what he wants to do, that's fine. All I'm saying is I would make sure that I at least fulfill my commitment. Okay? And that maybe not everybody can do that. And I know different writers write at different rates.
Right.
So, you know, some guys, it might only take them a week to write a script. Some guys, it might take them a month. You know, I mean, if it's taking you a month, you probably shouldn't be writing comics unless you're writing in advance, right? Because otherwise, how's your artist going to get the script? How's anybody going to edit it, color it, ink it, whatever? I don't know. I mean, and that's tough. That's tough. But I mean, like, I'd be okay if I had to switch artists. I'd be okay with taking a couple months off to find a new artist. Right? There's nothing wrong with that. But I'd make sure that the arc was finished.
Arguing about anymore?
I don't even know either. Jack brought it up.
Well, I did.
Yeah, you brought it up. Anyways,
no, I mean, my only point was that I feel like the way Aftershock has handled this has been more satisfactory for me than Image, especially more than Black Mask, who will start an issue, they'll get through like 2 or 3 issues, and then you might not ever hear about it again. It feels like at least these, and they're, you know, I mean, in an ideal world, I would like a perfect release schedule. Give me an issue every month through the arc, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't do that, at least give me some resolution. Because my biggest pet peeve with independent titles is when they just don't end. And you get an issue, you get another one like 3 months later, and then you just don't hear from the book again. And you're like, you know, I love this title. I was invested into it, and I don't know how it ended. At least give me some sort of like resolution.
Sure.
And then I can deal with it.
Sure. As long as the resolution's okay, because there are times where books end because they're like, well, shit, the book's gonna get canceled. We have one issue to finish the story.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the writer just either doesn't care to find the proper ending, or just can't find a proper ending.
Yeah.
Anyways, how did we get into this subject? What happened? I'm going to have to listen to this episode and see what the hell happened. See, we leave for 6 weeks, and here we come back with a soapbox.
Yep.
Golly. Let's talk about a comic. How about that? Let's do...
Sure.
Which one? Rough Riders? You want to do Rough Riders?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Jack. That's Jack's favorite. Rough Riders, Riders on the Storm, #2. I have a question about this issue, by the way. This is Adam Glass, creator, writer, Patrick Olaf, artist, Gabe Elteb, colorist, Sal Cipriano, in letters. I just like saying that.
He just sounded like Mario.
Oh, man. By the way, I just finished... talking about going off subject. I just finished Console Wars on Audible. It's a book about the video game console wars of the early 90s between Nintendo and Sega. It is freaking fantastic, dude. If you guys have Audible, go get that. If you still read Dead Page books, go get it. It's really, really good. I might actually have the writer on one of the podcasts to talk about it. Anyways, Riders on the Storm. I'm going to give a nutshell recap. The crew finds the McKinley's assassin. McKinley's in the hospital. Uh-huh. Roosevelt is a total badass. Annie Oakley is a robot / alien / no longer dead. The end. How's that?
Brought back to life by Edison, right?
Correct. He used the little alien earbug from the first series to bring her back to life.
And you get the sense that she's not quite all right, don't you? All right,
yes. Well, I mean, to an extent. I mean, she still feels like Annie, I think. I just don't know if we've had enough experience with her in this series to compare her to the previous. But yeah, something is a little off about her. Something is a little off. You know, I always talk about Jack Johnson and Houdini being my favorite pairing. But the pairing between Roosevelt and Edison in this issue... I think for me it was almost as good.
Agreed.
Because they're complete opposites, you know. But they share like the amazing intellect. But Roosevelt is obviously a do-gooder, and Edison, as we all know, is obviously a jackass. And it really shows when they're doing their detecting work at the site of the shooting. So I really like that. This is a great series, dude. Like, out of all the books, like, some you can go into and like really dive deep into what the hell's happening, what things mean. Like, this is one of those books that's just like really fun to read.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, you can think about it if you want to, but it's just pure fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I dig it.
Me too.
Thoughts on this issue?
Man, I'm always shocked how Houdini's able to whip his cards out like they're like they're knives, man. I'm trying to find the page, but there's one where he all of a sudden, like, there's a dude with a knife up to somebody's throat, and he just slings out a card and stabs him right in the hand.
Yep. Yeah, wasn't it Zolgas, whatever, I can't pronounce the name. You know, me and Czech names don't do very well. And it was funny because I dated a Czech girl in high school, and I couldn't pronounce anybody's name.
But hers.
But hers.
Because her name was Cinnamon.
No, buddy, that was after high school.
Oh, sorry.
That was after high school. As a matter of fact, that might be after college, too. I'm trying to remember. Anyways, yeah.
No.
Leon Czolgas, the guy that assassinated McKinley. Mm-hmm. That's the guy that they have in holding. I think doesn't he try to kill himself in the holding cell, and that's when Houdini shoots him with the cards?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yep.
Which, that was awesome.
He had the razor to his own throat.
Yep. Yeah, I tried to do a little research on this guy. And all I did was Wikipedia. It was kind of boring. I mean, most of the stuff was about the assassination. So, didn't seem like a very interesting dude. He was an anarchist, though, which plays a big part in this. And I tried to do some research on the saying that Leon says, Czolgas, whatever his name is. The Imperio Absenti Chaos Regit.
Oh, yeah.
So I looked it up, and it's something to the effect of... I don't even remember now. Something about no government What is it?
Chaos.
Yeah, without government, chaos rules. There you go.
Okay.
Something like that. Which is interesting. However, it really took me down a rabbit hole of many, many places, and I can't find where this phrase originated. But surely it's got to be like in a book or a movie or somebody in history said it. Like, it's got to be.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't find it. I looked and I found like some stuff from Seneca and Virgil, and I was like, oh, that's got to be it. But then I start going through the articles, and like they use some of those words, but mm-hmm. not in that order.
Sounds like something Marxist, maybe from that time period, 1920s or.
Well, this would have been earlier. This would have been early 20th century, so. It couldn't have been Marx.
Yeah.
I don't know. Plus, Marx is different. Marx is socialist. This guy's an anarchist. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he's not the only person to say it.
So, this is a good... We need to have Adam Glassell on it. And like, because I bet there's a lot of research he's done in preparing this book that, you know, you may or may not pick up on.
Yes. Yep. And you know what's weird, too? Trying to find this phrase. I found this phrase on many a website. Most of them because mm-hmm. some dude had it, like, as a signature in, like, forums, you know? But there was one that was in Spanish, and I think this was part of a poem. And the name of the website translated to The Clan of the Storm.
Yeah.
Which I thought was odd, considering the subtitle of the series is Riders on the Storm. But again, I found no connection on that site to anything else. So it might be definitely one to ask Adam Glass about.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And Joe said he'd help us get some of these guys on, right? So let's try to get him on and talk about this.
Yeah.
There we go.
So, yeah. Good issue. I like... The plague doctor masks that the bad guys mm-hmm. use. Mm-hmm. That's like one of my favorite costume designs.
Yeah.
Ever in anything.
I don't
even know what it is. And I've done some research on those masks. It was actually really, really interesting. They would put like potpourri in the beaks because they felt like good smells would kill like the bad stuff in the air that would cause disease.
The bad smells.
Yeah. Well, you know, they didn't know about germs and viruses and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. If you ever do a little research on plague masks.
That's cool.
I thought it was super cool. That was a great, great, fantastic issue. And Adam Glass is super nice, dude, at that panel.
Was he at the Aftershock panel?
See? Maybe you should have listened.
I thought you listened to it.
I'm just kidding. Just testing y'all.
Sounds like you should go listen to episode 21, Jack. Maybe
you can find it at nerdylegion.com.
There you
slash
go.
/shows/ACP.
I won't tell you because it's a lot. Anyways, yeah, good issue. This is like a four every week for me, or every time it comes out. So.
And he's been consistent with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Always on time. And matter of fact, go ahead.
I was just saying that's what kind of gets me excited about the new book coming out too.
Yeah. Yeah, we should talk about that a little bit at the end.
Is that Pestilence? Which one is it?
He's doing the normals.
The normals.
Yeah. And, you know, he is consistent, like you said. I think the new issue comes out next week or the week after.
The normals, man. I feel like I've seen that story before.
Which,
No, you haven't.
Isn't there a DC show that just came out that's sort of the same concept?
All right. You know what? Let's just talk about this now. Explain yourself. Explain yourself.
I jumped into that. What's the DC show that came out that's about all the people that aren't superheroes? I haven't seen it yet.
Powerless?
Powerless, yeah. Isn't it normal, that sort of same kind of concept?
All right, number one, Powerless is a terrible show. Number two, Powerless is canceled.
Already?
Yes. Number three is nothing like it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know if is it officially canceled, Ronnie? I know you and I were talking about this a little bit.
It has been pulled off schedule, but not officially canceled.
Yeah, not officially canceled, yeah. But I mean, it does a schedule, so...
Read between the lines, it's canceled.
It gets canceled. Talk about finishing a story, that's not going to get finished.
And Powerless is about, like, the insurance company that... Right?
Yeah, kind of. I don't want to talk about that show, dude. It's so bad.
Well, I was just comparing to the normal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's a subdivision of Wayne Enterprises that develops gear to combat super-powered people.
Okay.
It's supposed to be like The
like
Office
kind of. Normals.
No, nothing like the normals. I mean, listening to Adam Glass talk about the normals on this panel, available on episode 21 of this podcast, I got a completely different feeling about it. Because at first, to me, it seemed... what was the movie that I compared it to? That terrible Nicolas Cage movie? Family Man? Maybe it's what it's called?
I think that's what you're...
Yeah, it's Nicolas Cage and he's married to the chick that used to be married to the guy from X-Files.
David Duchovny?
David Duchovny, yeah, his ex-wife. It plays Nick Cage's wife in that. And it, to me, when I read the solicit, it kind of felt like that. Matter of fact, on the last episode of Nerd Legion, Nick and I talked about this because we talked a little bit about the panel, and I explained to him, listening to Adam talk about it, I was like, that is not at all the book that I thought it was, because the way he explained it, I mean, I guess we can spoil it, right?
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
Yeah.
The way he explained it is, like, they're all robots.
Oh, really?
But, like, they don't know they're robots.
Huh. Yeah.
And one day he realizes that he's a robot. And so, when I heard that, to me it seemed more like...
Westworld.
Yeah, Westworld, Division, maybe. I know you don't like Divisions, Jack, sorry, but... they know they're robots in Division, so maybe that's not the right comparison. But, you know, because it's a family of robots...
Yeah,
And they get reprogrammed this and that.
That's crazy because I've only read the preview. That's all I know about this book is from the preview.
Yeah,
I had no clue. There's no clue anywhere through this that there's artificial intelligence or anything or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just a normal story about a family, and you're like, I mean, I was like, this sounds like my day today so far. Like, why do I want to read that?
And again, I mean, you know, we're not comic book writers. None of us are in marketing. But from my conversation with Nick, it seemed to me like it would have made more sense to promote this book as that.
More of a sci-fi feel to it.
Yeah, more of a sci-fi feel. And I don't know if maybe they don't want to promote all their books that way because a lot of the books are very sci-fi. Right.
Yeah.
So I get that. And I don't know, maybe part of it was the way that Adam explained the book. Because he's obviously very passionate about everything he does. Like, he seemed very passionate about Rough Riders. He did say Houdini is his favorite character, which makes total sense. Because he is the best character in that book, hands down. But he seemed as passionate about the normals. And good, I mean, if you haven't listened to the panel, go back, listen to the panel. Listen to Adam talk about the normals. And you tell me if you disagree that I don't think this book was maybe marketed correctly.
Well, maybe they have... None of us have read the entire issue, right?
No. We didn't get a copy of that, right?
We got the ash can.
Yeah, we got the ash can.
Maybe it's sort of like a twist ending at the end of the first issue.
It's something
you don't want to spoil the way it's written.
And you're probably right. You're probably right.
I have no clue. I just read the first. I mean, I read the first three pages of the preview, and I'm like, I don't understand what this is selling. It felt to me like they stuck the beginning of this book in there without really thinking about how it would come across. And I was like, there has to be more to this than just a family living out their mundane, typical life.
Yeah. See, I try not to read previews anymore.
Do you?
I look through them just to see what the art looks like, and that's about it.
Yeah.
That's about it. Same reason, you know, you make fun of me for not watching trailers anymore.
But no, I'm with you.
It's the same thing.
I totally get it.
First of all, how many trailers for something can I watch? Like, one trailer is good enough, bro. Like, don't give me one every week. And don't give me a trailer for a trailer. Like, that's stupid.
The problem is they give you – I don't mind a couple of trailers, but they give you so many now that by the time you get to the movie, you're like, man, I've seen all this.
Yeah, you've seen half the movie.
Right.
And, I mean, there's some movies that you know you're going to watch regardless, right? So, like, the Star Wars trailer I thought was terrible. A lot of people liked it. That's fine. I thought it was terrible. But you know what? I don't give a shit. I'm going to watch the movie anyway, so it doesn't matter how bad the trailer was.
Yeah.
Right? Right.
And now they have the trailers for the trailers.
Yeah, like, teasers.
The teaser trailers.
In two days.
We have a two-minute trailer.
Yeah. Well, that's like when the Justice League trailer came out. They had like a trailer every day for each character. And I was like, dude, I'm not gonna watch any of these. Just like, I'll wait till Saturday when these are all done, and I'll watch the full trailer.
Right.
Right. Because it's the same footage that you showed me all week, except put together in a way that makes sense. Anyway, so I do that with I do the same with comics. Like I said, I'll look at it for the art, but I generally try not to read whatever the words are on the page. God, see, there's another diet, dude. We cannot go, you know, 5 weeks again without recording.
Yeah,
it's the second diatribe we've gone on.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so let's see. We've got Eleanor and the Egret, World Reader,
yep.
Black Eyed Kids. I want to do Black Eyed Kids last, if that's okay with you guys.
Yep.
Partially so we can get Joe to listen to the whole podcast. I'm just kidding. Yeah, let's do Eleanor and the Egret number one. That came out a couple weeks ago. It's John Layman writing. It is the amazing, uber talented Sam Keith on art. And I'm very curious to know what you guys think about this.
Ronnie.
Tell Jack doesn't like it.
No. I'm not saying that at all. I don't know what to make of this book, to be honest. That's why I want to hear what Ronnie says first.
I didn't know what to make of it going into it, really. I knew it was kind of a heist type book, but it's really different.
Yeah.
I love Sam Keith art. Always have, and I don't know, it's so different. It's not your typical heist book. I mean, obviously there's a talking bird in it, so it's not that normal, but I'm very interested in where it's going from here.
Yeah.
I didn't overly love it, but you know, it's kind of middle of the road for me, really.
Yeah,
Jack.
I mean, I'm the same way. I didn't love it, but it's so peculiar that you want more. I want to know where it's going. And out of all these books, like, I read this, and it's not the type of story that I want to read and that I'm into. But out of this pile, out of all these books, this is the one I want to hear what you guys want to say on it, because it's just so unusual, and it's curious.
So I think what's really interesting about this book is that it's not a typical American comic. But I think if you're used to reading European graphic novels, then this would feel very familiar to you.
Right.
Because, for one, Sam Keith has that very artsy style that's a little more commonplace in European books. Obviously, the book takes place in Europe. The costume designs are very like Victorian kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes place in modern times. But you know, like the costume that she wears when she goes to, when Eleanor goes to the museum to look at the painting is very Victorian. I mean, to have a bird be such a main character like that, that's not in the way that it's used. It's not typically an American way of doing things. And yeah, you can talk about, you know, anthropomorphic characters like turtles or Usagi, Paul's favorite. But this is not that at all. Like it's a bird, right? I mean, it's a talking bird. But it's got that like magical surrealism thing to it.
Yeah, it's like whimsical.
Yeah, it's very whimsical, and I think that's why I say that maybe if you're more familiar with European stuff, you'd be a little more prone to enjoy this. I mean, I loved it. I loved it. I'm reading Black Sad right now. I don't know if you guys. I know I talked to you about it, Ronnie, at C2E2 because we saw a hardcover there at the Dark Horse booth.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. Anthropomorphic animals. But just the way that the characters interact here is really interesting. The fact that the egret, when they do the side by side of the heist, I thought it was hilarious the whole way through. Because the detective is trying to figure out, like, oh, well, how is this hole up on the roof? Like, how did the thief get in here? Is it a man or a woman? Like, they broke into the safe, but they didn't break into it, you know, because the safe is still locked. And then on the other side, they show the egret changes its bill shape to cut through the dome, and then somehow has his harness on him.
Right.
To lift her out of there. Down. Yeah, that was kind of odd. And then to get into the safe, he changes his beak into a key. I don't know. It was really weird and very surreal. And of course, Sam Keith's art really helps to that, right? Because his art style is a little surreal. If I did have an issue with the book, though, and this is nothing against the colorist, but it is the colorist, I didn't like the colors as much. And I know that typically this is the coloring style that people use on Sam Keith and his indie stuff. Obviously not when he was working for the Big Two, but you know, like the Max was a lot like this. And now it's been recolored because he didn't like the coloring. It still looks a little like this. But there's something about his art. So if you read past the end of the issue, and you saw the black and white pages, I would have been perfectly okay. And granted, I do love black and white art, so maybe that's not fair for everybody else. But there was something to me where the art stood out more as black and white than it did with the colors.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It looks more classic, whereas the color makes it look a little more cartoony.
Yes, yes. But I mean, I think that's part of it, right? Like, the goal ultimately is to make it look a little more cartoony, more whimsical, like Ronnie said. So maybe that makes sense. Personally, I would have preferred to see it in black and white.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm sure, you know, black and white books don't sell as well either. You see what I mean? So that's a hard choice to make.
Is this an ongoing?
Is it? I mean, if it is, does it matter?
Well, it feels to me like the sort of story that, like you mentioned, European story. Like, it feels like that sort of European folktale where you could sort of tell a mini-series and it has this sort of twist ending that ties it all together into some moral thing or whatever. rather than a story that could just keep going on and on.
Yeah, I'd be good with that. I don't know if it's an ongoing or not. To me, it doesn't seem like it. It seems like this would be maybe five or six issues. Right.
Yeah, I was going to say five or six.
But, I mean, they could always bring it back. I mean, that's what Rough Riders did, right? That's what a lot of series are doing nowadays. Nobody does ongoings anymore, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was interesting, and I really dug it. I dug it more for the art. I've never been a huge John Layman fan. Nothing against John Layman. Like, Chew was fine, at least in the beginning. But for me, it was more reading this to see Sam Keith art. Because there's only so many times I can reread the Max.
How did this compare to Chew? Because I didn't read it, but I know a lot of people loved it. It's a really popular book.
I mean,
it's kind of different. I mean, it's like apples to oranges, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. This is nothing like Chew.
Yeah. Because Chew was very X, or at least R-rated, right?
Yeah, yeah. And again, the art style fit that story better, whereas Sam's art fits this story better.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't know. I read this more for Sam Keith than anything else. Either way, I dug the story. I thought it was hilarious. Obviously, I think the art's beautiful. I know a lot of people don't like Sam Keith's art. That's okay. They're wrong. It doesn't matter.
Yep. Aaron S. Bell.
God, he hates it. Hates it.
He hates everything.
He does hate everything. He's the new Paul. He's the new Paul. I mean, overall, we're not adopting the new Netflix rating, right? Because that's dumb. We're going to stick with the old 5-star. It's tough. Are we doing half stars? Did we ever decide that after 22 episodes if we're doing half stars?
No.
Man, I don't know how
we
to
do anyway.
This.
All right, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and do a half star. I'm going to give us a 3.5. Only because I think there's so much more that can happen. Or potentially this could become a 4 or 5-star book for me. But I think for a first issue, it was really well done. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. My cup of tea, I know it won't be for a lot of people, and that's okay.
How about you, Ronnie? It's all you, man. I'm going to give it a whimsical 3.1415 9265 pi rating.
Nice.
I'll go with, like, there in the half. So I'll go the 3.5 just because I liked art. Sometimes the colors are a little different, but I mean, it fits the story for the whimsical, but I do want to see where this goes. Just like you said, Martin, it could turn into a 4 or 5-star book for sure.
Yeah. Yep. You know what would have been cool, by the way? I just thought about this. When they do those side-by-side panels, if they had done like the modern stuff, black and white, and then the high stuff in color, that might have been pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways. I mean, most of the book's not going to take place in flashbacks anyway, right? So
right.
In that case, you'd end up with a mostly black and white book. Let's go to World Reader. By Jeff Loveness. Wando, I love Wando art. Rachel Deering on colors. I don't even know how to describe this book. Who wants to nutshell this book?
Well, first of all, this book took C2E2 by storm.
Oh yeah, really? Let's start off with that. Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
There
is a C2E2.
Yep.
Exclusive cover for it.
Huh.
And it lasted a day and barely a half.
Yep.
Wow.
On Saturday.
My dumbass went to the booth on Friday and said, oh, yeah, I'll pick this up this weekend.
Oh, wow.
I did pick up the blank cover Animosity trade.
So did I.
I think I might have gotten the last one. Sorry, everybody else. You picked one up as well. And I was like, do I want to get this? I was like, not really. Because I'm trying not to buy variants, really, you know? I just want to get a book to read it. And I was like, I already got the first issue. I haven't read it, but I have it, whatever. And what was it, Sunday when we went by there, or Saturday? Sunday.
Both days. But Saturday, they were completely... Saturday afternoon, they were completely gone.
Yeah, completely gone.
Huh.
And apparently you can find them on eBay. I haven't checked in a few days, but they were going between like $35 and $50 on eBay.
Wow.
Whereas they were on sale, I think, for $10 at C2E2. So
for $10, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, completely sold out. Apparently the buzz is really good on it.
Yeah. I showed you the picture of my comic store. The shelf was empty.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that wasn't actually my local comic shop. This is the kind of book they wouldn't buy that many copies of. So the picture I sent you was actually at Heroes, which is sort of the largest store in the Carolinas, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, they were completely sold out.
Interesting. But how many copies did he order, though? That's what I want to know.
I don't know, man. They usually order a pretty good stack of everything.
Yeah? Anyways, either way, it's really good for them, right? I mean, I think the big book, really, for Aftershock has been Animosity. And I think a lot of...
Joe said that this one might be the second one, though.
Yeah, that's the way it looks.
He was getting ready to put this one back into the second printing.
Yep.
I think.
So you might be seeing a second printing. And it's kind of weird, because Loveness only does Groot, right? Is he writing anything else?
I think that's it, really.
So, I mean, it seems to me, and I mean, I could be wrong. Loveness fans, I apologize. but generally, you know, when you have hot buzz on a book, it's because there's a hot writer on it, okay?
Yeah, he's doing Nova also.
Oh, okay, he is doing Nova. You're right.
But Nova's getting canceled, so.
Already?
That's because too bad. It's this younger, stupid one. Anyways.
Everything's getting ready to get canceled, but we'll get to that.
We won't get to that. You're on the wrong podcast, buddy.
All right.
Anyways, okay, so Nova and Groot. I mean, neither of those I would think are huge sellers. But I mean, maybe Loveness has a faithful following and they're coming to get this book. I don't know. You can never tell with some of these things, dude. You know, like sometimes it just happened out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I think this is just, this is sci-fi. And to me, this sounded more interesting than anything else that's come out recently just by the description. It sounded like an interesting story, something that people want to hear nowadays.
Shameful.
This should be your episode title. Everything's shameful.
Why is that shameful?
I don't know. I was just... Because Pestilence sounds awesome, and so does Unholy Grail.
Unholy Grail, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe I'm just a sci-fi fan, but I thought sci-fi...
And baby
teeth. Sort of where it's at right now.
Sci-fi is where it's at. This book wasn't quite what I expected.
Me neither.
But I enjoyed it.
I love this book.
And I love looking at Wondo's art. I don't know what... Maybe it's the colors. I think the colors really help. But I think even in black and white, it would be good. The story was weird, though, because it's a lot of setup. And there's like a couple twists here and there which make it interesting. But it definitely felt like a first issue, if you know what I mean, right? There wasn't anything like to really, really grab me to pick up the next one. But it was interesting enough, and the concept was explored enough, where I'm curious to see where it goes. I mean, it still gave me a little bit of that Black Science vibe. And originally, when I read the description, the solicit, it felt like it might be something like Black Science. And obviously, I don't think they're going to copy Black Science, and it could still somewhat turn into that. You guys read Black Science, right? If you don't, then you're both fired.
Oh man, I read the first 10 issues and I did not like it.
All right, that's fine. You hate good books. It's fine. It's the best Image book, and you're not reading it. What's wrong with you?
Oh man, that's a debate for another time. I got some words about that. What you just said, though.
Anyways, it was fine. I don't even know how to describe it. There's not a lot of words in the book, right? So there's not much to explain either. Yeah. Like this group is traveling around the universe. All right, maybe I understood it wrong. So correct me, okay? You ready, Ronnie? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
There's a group traveling around the universe, trying to find why the universe is dying. Okay, because it seems like there's humanity is like the only thing left. Okay, all the planets are dying, and they happen to have this one person with them. Who is like a psychic. That's why it's called World Reader. So she can like touch things and look at things, and she gets like the psychic impression of that thing and things that happened around that thing. Yes. And so they get to this planet, and she does her World Reader thing to see what happened with the civilization. Everybody was apparently killed. And it turns out that there's a being that's doing all the killing.
Yeah.
Is that right?
See, I thought that they were there, like, doing world explorations, like, trying to find life. And then that's why she wants to stay there longer, and they don't find it. So they're just like, okay, let's go, or whatever, take your test and hurry up, and let's get off here, and we'll go to the next one.
Well, yeah.
But she's like...
There was that one.
She's mesmerized by it.
Yeah, there was that one section because whoever's leading this mission was ready to go, and her buddy somehow bought her an hour so she can look into it a little bit more.
Yeah,
And that's when things get a little weird.
Things got hairy
with the octopus mouth creature. I don't even know what was it. Smoke. I like to say octopus mouth because tentacles are creepy. Okay, so we'll just leave that.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. This is definitely going to be one of those really, really good stories in trade. I can already tell. And I hope that the book stays on schedule so I can continue reading this and learn a little bit more about this world.
Right.
But I think if Loveness really pulls the story off correctly... this could become one of my favorite books. I'll just have to wait and see.
You're all about the sci-fi.
I'm all about the sci-fi. I just can't tell from the first issue yet.
Yeah, because I thought this was going to be a very sort of planet exploration, outer space type book, cosmic, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the main character gives it a much more sort of... what's the word? Metaphysical, like supernatural thing, where she's... looking into spirits that have died and whatnot, so I don't know which way they're going to go with it.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Ronnie?
It's space ghosts.
Coast to coast.
I like it. I do hope that the next issue ramps up, though, because you're right, this one was a number one, and it read like a number one.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope number two actually ramps us up and goes somewhere.
Agreed. We're going to rate this one up already?
Yep, rate it up.
I'm going to give it... I'm going to stick with my 3.5 on this one.
Yeah, me too. I think I was sort of... I didn't like it as much as I thought I would, partly because it was so hyped. And I sat down with this expecting to just be blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. Maybe I would have liked it more if I had lower expectations. But one thing I will say, and you're not going to like this, but if you're on a future planet, I want to see art with more detail. Like they have these big frames where there's nothing in the background or there's just sort of swirly psychedelic looking art, and I'm like, man, you're on another planet. I don't know. The art didn't. I like his art typically, and I like it on American Monster. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, on this book, it didn't work as well for me.
Well, I mean, it is psychedelic. She's like in this astral plane. Yeah, maybe,
right. And maybe that goes back to my expectations. I was expecting more of a sort of deep space, sort of cosmic story, and instead I got this psychedelic supernatural thing. So
okay,
maybe that's why.
Fair enough. I mean, you can definitely.
I'm giving it a...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I'm giving it a 4.
Nice.
Because I think the story itself was kind of iffy, if you can go one way or another. But as you read and the intimate parts that she put into it, mm-hmm. that brought the spirits back, really got into the story.
Yep.
Instead of just glossed over it.
I think the key with this book for me is going to be how well I can connect with Sarah.
Yeah,
and how well she can connect with whatever she's connecting psychically to. So it's a whole lot of connecting.
Yep, connect four.
I can make a dirty joke, but I won't. My wife and I were watching Broad City. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but every time I watch Broad City, it makes me think of dirty jokes. That show's hilarious. Anyways, last book we're going to talk about is Black Eyed Kids number 12. It's written by some guy named Joe Pruitt. The art is Simon Kudrunsky. Guy Major on colors, Martian Dillon on letters. And I guess we'll do story first, and then we'll talk about the after the book part. So, quick recap. Gus and Meredith have a moment. He begins to explain to her what happened in Kentucky when these black kids appeared. Michael is maybe good, maybe bad, but not really, because here comes the master, the end. Yeah. How's that?
You have the shortest recaps ever.
I mean, that's pretty good, though. That's what happens.
Right. Yeah.
So, thoughts on this one? Uh-oh. The black-eyed kids are coming. I hear the sirens in the background.
Yeah. That's me.
Dang, Ronnie.
They're coming for me.
Oh, boy.
See? I came out of my hidey hole, and then here they come.
Oh, boy. What? Who even knows? So, all right, let's talk about this. I almost feel like maybe I missed something.
Okay.
With the Meredith and Gus stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have gone back and reread 11, because it's very possible that maybe I missed something in 11. But it's almost like we only got part of the story that I was hoping we would get. And again, there's something that's mentioned at the end of the book, in the after the book part, that's maybe why I feel that way. Because Gus starts telling Meredith about what happened when she was a child, but we don't really get what happened to her when she was a child.
Yeah.
What we get is, I was in the military and I hypnotized you and a bunch of people to forget things.
Yep.
Right.
But we don't know what those things are.
But we know what those things are. And I was like, God damn it, Joe. I want to know what those things are. And we didn't get that.
That's it.
Exactly. That's it. So that was, I don't want to say it bothered me, because it didn't bother me. But I wish the whole issue would have been that Meredith and Gus interaction.
Huh.
And again, it seems to me like that is the story that's being told later on.
Yeah.
And again, we can come back to that piece. But, you know, either way, I think that interaction was very interesting. And getting to know even a little bit more about the connection between all these people was really interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Because what's Michael's mom? Was that Jessica? Is that her name? I know it was a J name. It turns out that, I mean, everybody's... We already knew everybody was connected, right? But not necessarily how. And I mean, Jessica was there in Kentucky at this, I'm going to go ahead and just say cult, because I'm pretty sure that's what it is right now. She was there in Kentucky, and she kind of helped raise Meredith, or at least keep an eye on her to keep her safe. And that's her connection to the whole thing. And so that was nice to see. I like that we're slowly getting connections. You know, we've talked about this book being like one issue, there's a lot of background given, and then the next one is a little more action, and then you go back to a lot of background, and this definitely feels like one of those. Which is good, because after this issue, there's no Black Eyed Kids for, what, July? Okay, till July. So, it's nice that we got a little bit more.
Yeah.
Again, I wish it would have been even more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't blow your wad all at once.
See, that's what
as the kids say.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've had 12 issues of Black Eyed Kids, and it's been awesome, but it's sort of at the point where we've been reading it for a year or more, and the pace sort of needs to change. That's my opinion, at least. Like, we need to start getting something more than just the slow evolving pace that we've had through 12 issues. Not because it's bad, but because it's just we've sort of been there, done that.
No, you know, I see what you're saying. I don't know if I have an issue with the pacing, but I just want more reveal at this point. Partially because of what you said, right? It has been 12 issues.
Pacing was a bad choice of words. I meant sort of a change of direction. Like, we need to start going somewhere.
And I think there was enough set up here where when the book comes back, it could easily move quicker.
Right.
Because, I mean, what I got out of this issue is, so everyone is connected. We kind of know how. We know Gus was responsible for saving whoever was able to leave. However, he is also responsible for these kids being out in public, it seems to me, because he was trying to hide Meredith and some of these other people is why all this bad shit is happening to everybody now. And it also seems like maybe now, and I could have read this wrong, by the way, but it seems to me like maybe now we know that this group was like a witch coven cult. Was that the only one that got that?
Yeah. Nope. Something like that, yes.
I thought it was mentioned that it was a witch coven.
Yeah, I think so. High priestess type thing.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of makes the Black Eyed Kids kind of demons. That's cool. I'm good with that. I still would have preferred the alien in the ear thing, Joe.
Well, but, see, I think you're both wrong. So that's why you're both not in the book. Because this issue ramped it up so much where I'm like disappointed that it's taking a break until July.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean,
the end.
I'm just saying, like, I understand, like, you guys getting tired of, like, putting the carrot in front and keep leading us on, but
yeah.
I think that's the whole thing, is like each issue has asked questions but also gave us minimal answers.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, I think that's what we all enjoyed about it, and now it's like,
well, that's what I'm still saying. I'm ready for the answer. I'm at the point where I need the answer, or at least part of the answer.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm not disagreeing with either of you. I'm somewhere in the middle.
No, I know.
I don't think the action ramped up here, but I think it's the beginning of
the end.
I'm trying to see how I can word this without making it seem like the pacing's going to pick up, because that's not what I mean to say at all. So when you watch a movie, right, like, at the beginning, you have the intro, okay? And then you have the action building up. And then you have like the big battle and the denouement, okay, uh-huh. at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like we're still climbing, right, yeah, yeah. to get to that point. And I mean, judging by the way this particular issue ends with the master showing up, where everybody's holed up, maybe that it will lead into that. Mm-hmm. But you know, now we have to wait what 2 months, 3 months
yeah.
To see
yeah,
that.
See, and with the master showing up with the group, that's like where we turn the corner, I think.
What I mean is, I hope so, right? Because I don't want the master to show up, and then you know, there's some kind of MacGuffin that lets these people out of the house.
Right.
Okay. Like for example, Michael. I don't want Michael to be a MacGuffin.
Right.
Right. Because what we got from the last couple issues with Michael is that yes, he's a black-eyed kid, but somehow or other, maybe he can resist some of that.
Right.
And that's why he's able to help his sister. And now he's shown up here where they're holed up, and I don't want. I mean, he introduced the master into the house.
Right.
Right. But I don't want him to be. To do something that lets the family escape. Okay.
Yeah.
If there's a way for them to escape, I want it to be something with the something that the master does or says that allows them to say that. Because right. I think at this point, if Michael is the one that does that, that might be too easy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I mean, if that's the way it sort of develops, that's fine. You know, I have no doubt that Joe can make it seem where I don't feel like it's a MacGuffin. I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
I just don't want it to be the MacGuffin. That's all. But I mean, it's a tough spot they're in though, because they're holed up mm-hmm. in this house, and I mean, they're gonna be surrounded.
And until Ronnie comes
there.
Back from Florida.
That sounds going to end. Ronnie's going to pop out of the closet at the final
I'm in
issue.
Florida. I'm in Florida.
Oh,
I'm coming
sure
back home.
You are.
And then all of a sudden, samurai swords. We're out of there.
Sure you are, Ronnie.
Spoiler.
Maybe on the way back from Florida, you can pick Ronnie and I in the Carolinas. And we can drive over. We can be like what was that the three people in X-Files? Oh crap. They had their own show for like one season, it was terrible. But they're the ones that helped Mulder do the investigation yeah. on the paranormal stuff. You know what I mean? The lone gunman, yeah. that's what it was.
Yeah, the lone gunman.
We can be like the lone swordsman.
Yeah.
We just show up with katanas and wreck shit. Anyways, yeah, there's some interesting stuff in here. We also finally learned a little bit more about the creepy blind kid that got himself arrested at the beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm.
That was recruiting in jail. He was Meredith's boyfriend in high school. That's weird.
Yeah.
But what's even weirder is that he was one of the kids in this witch camp in Kentucky. And he managed to escape, but he wasn't as lucky as Meredith was because Gus didn't help him. Uh-huh. Him and his mom somehow managed to get out. And I got the impression that he kind of dated Meredith just to spite her, maybe.
Yeah, that's how I got it.
That poor girl. Yep. Anyways, you know, the more I talk about it, the more I realize. You might be right, Ronnie.
Yes, I know.
Jack, you're wrong. Ronnie, you're right. A lot did happen in this issue. Mm-hmm. A lot more than I realized at first. See, that's why I like talking to you guys. That's why we should talk more often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Well, this is one of those stories. This whole title is one of those things that if you marinate on it, you get more out of it, for me at least.
No, I'm totally with you. Totally with you. Although, generally, Ronnie and I are all for it.
Mm-hmm. Usually.
Usually. Anything else that we missed in this issue of the Black Eyed Kids?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Cool. Old Gus. Gus is the man, dude. I bet he was one of those guys doing like the creepy, like CIA studies on like pot and LSD and stuff. He seemed like that kind of guy to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He even had the hippie ponytail back then.
Yeah, he had the hippie ponytail. Anyways, good issue. Let's rate this one up. I'll just go ahead and give it a 4. Because that's generally my go-to rating for this book.
Yep.
I liked it. The art was good as always. There were a few panels that bothered me, by the way.
Were they transition panels?
Or? Yeah, yeah. Well, some of the flashback panels bothered me. They didn't seem as finished. I think the art in this book really shines in the darker panels.
Right.
Than in the bright panels, and a lot of those flashback panels were very bright.
There's a lot of panels with no background at all, where the background is just completely black, and all you see is one or two people.
That doesn't really bother me too much.
No.
The lack of panels, lack of backgrounds. I know a lot of people do look at that kind of stuff. I usually am more concerned with what the characters are doing than what the backgrounds are doing, unless the background is like an integral part of what's happening in the panel.
Now, did the black guy? What are they doing during the day? Because all these stories always take place at night.
They just hang out.
They're contemplating.
Do they come out during the day? Are they vampire-ish?
I don't know. Do they come out?
Or is this just the way it's been drawn?
I'm trying to think if there's been anything.
I think so, because you wouldn't wear sunglasses at night.
I mean, don't you know that song, Ronnie? I wear my sunglasses at night.
That's why I threw it in there, because I'm a professional, and we said at the beginning it's going to be lyrical.
It's a good thing we don't do YouTube, because all the songs I have to put in here,
I know,
we'd get thrown out of YouTube in a second.
Yep.
Anyways,
I think that it's happened during the day as well. We just can't tell since it's black and white.
Fair enough. You guys were ready to talk about this letter at the end?
Talk about our Dear John letter.
Joe speaks!
So Martha, have you ever seen that show Martha Speaks, the cartoon?
No.
If you have kids. That just played in my head. That played in my head when you said that.
So at the end of the issue, Joe writes a letter apologizing for the delay between issue 11 and 12.
Right. The one delay. One delay out of 12 issues.
I'd say that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not bad at that. Nope. But part of the reason why the book was late was apparently Joe had started to write the issue, wrote about 75% of the issue, and decided that that's not the story he wanted to tell for this issue. He wanted to tell that story for a later issue. And so he rewrote the book, and that became what we read. And I thought that was interesting. Like I said earlier, I wonder if that's part of the reason why I felt the way I felt in that those scenes between Meredith and Gus. I wonder if originally it wasn't meant to be all of that background story.
Yeah.
Well, originally it was going to be the story where we come in and chop people's heads off. And he was like, 12 issues, no, we got to keep going.
See, you're right. You're right. Again, Ronnie, you're right.
I can't deny or confirm that he said that at C2E2 either.
Oh, man. So, anyway, I thought that was interesting. A full issue rewrite, almost when you're done, can't be easy.
Right.
And the fact that even through that, the book, I mean, I didn't even realize that it had been more than a month. 5 weeks in between issues, so and the fact that everybody else got to put the book together as quickly as they got the script, I think that really says a lot for what Joe's trying to do with this book.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely means he cares about the story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, good on you, Joe. Thumbs up. But we are sad. The book won't be back till July. That's kind of sad.
That's sad. I won't be back on this podcast until July.
All right, good. Oh, man. Black Eyed Kids, Volume 2 is out. I know I picked my copy up. I see 2E2. Pick that up if you haven't.
I picked mine up because that's the volume that I'm in.
Oh, ho, ho. Look at you.
Oh, prestige.
Hey, Jack, are you going to Heroes?
Of course.
Okay.
I can walk there.
Yeah, you could walk there.
It's not that close.
Yeah, it is.
I have no excuse for not going to Heroes, though. It's really not too far.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I drove 12 hours each way to Chicago. I can drive the hour and a half to Charlotte.
Are you going, Ronnie? Are you going?
I don't know yet. It came. Mm-hmm. It's not the con that we were talking about. We were talking about Baltimore that was in later in the year.
Yeah, but Heroes, it's a lot like Baltimore.
Yeah, but...
And Mike and Daryl and Chris will be there.
Now, is Joe going to be there?
Joe will be there, yeah.
Dude, the three of us need to be there. We need to do a sit-down live podcast with Joe. Live from Heroes.
That's live only like Heroes. 3 months away, right?
It is the second week of June, so it's like 6 weeks away.
Yeah, okay. If I hit the lottery between now and then.
Hey. Martin's going to buy your ticket.
let's set up a GoFundMe.
No, that's fine. You drive out here. You can stay at the house, and I'll get you in. I'm not going the whole weekend though, so you might need to get a car for the second day. I'm just going Saturday.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that should be fun. Let's did we get all the books for April? I think we did. Well, we missed one, Captain Kidd. I think I might do a solo on Captain Kidd. I haven't decided yet.
A Marco solo.
Martin solo.
I want to talk about some things. I know maybe you guys aren't as keen on that book. And I'm not saying that I loved it, but I just feel like it should be discussed at least. So we'll see. But this week we have three books.
We already talked about this, I thought.
We did, two books. Pestilence number one comes out this week, which I'm very excited about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very excited about.
Rough Riders 3.
Yeah, I think Frank Thierry is getting ready to see if I actually like it, because he just followed me on Twitter. And I was like, huh, how convenient. Anyway, that's a joke. That's not true. But he did just follow me. Rough Riders number 3 is coming out. So I know Jack will be excited for that. And what's the other one? Blood Blister.
Well, is Eleanor and Egret 2 coming out?
Eleanor and Egret is the 17th. It's Bloodthirster number 2, Pestilence number 1,
yeah.
And Rough Riders number 3 will be out this week. Full house again. Hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully. By the way, Phil Hester was super awesome.
Oh, yeah? Did you talk to him?
Yeah. I know you guys talked to him on the podcast. That's great. I wasn't there.
Right.
Ronnie made fun of me at the booth for that.
Yeah, you deserved it.
But, yeah, he was super cool. Dude, even at the panel, it was amazing to see him at the panel. Because he's drawing the whole time.
Really? During the panel?
During the panel, he's drawing the entire time. But does not miss a beat at any point of the panel. Like, somebody will be talking about something, and like he'll just quit drawing, pick up his head, and start talking about it. And when he's done, he goes back to drawing. Like not even being called on. Like he was obviously very attentive throughout the entire thing. But
what was he drawing?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm sure it was commissions or something.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I was so close, dude. So close. He had some shipwreck original pages there. And they were super cheap, man. It was like $100 for a page. Oh, did we lose Ronnie? Hang on.
Think so.
He might have lost the internet.
Just lost interest.
Anyways, Phil was super awesome. Dude, everybody was super awesome.
Yeah.
Donnie Cates was hilarious during the panel. The way he explained baby teeth, like I was already going to pick it up because I love everything that Donnie Cates does.
Yeah.
But the way he explained baby teeth was the funniest thing I've heard in quite a while.
I bet. Babies don't have teeth. What's that about?
Well, you know, he was explaining the story about like his brother having a kid and how that inspired baby teeth. And it was really
isn't it about funny. Isn't it about like a demon baby?
Yeah, the Antichrist. Yes,
right.
Anyways, it's amazing.
And you said it was his. So I'm sure that kid, when he grows up to read his book that he inspired as a baby, he'll be thrilled.
Dude, I'm telling you, that guy was amazing. Anyway, I guess we should wrap up since Ronnie's disappeared.
Yeah.
Maybe he let some black-eyed kids into his house. And they whisked him away.
No, he's going to try to infiltrate this podcast.
You've been listening to the Aftershock Central podcast. God, this might be the longest episode ever, dude.
An hour and 40
minutes, yeah. It's crazy. It's what happens when we disappear for a month and a half.
And we try to squeeze in 6 books.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, you can find us all on Twitter, of course. At Jack Sutherland, at RonBar316, at Geekvine, at AftershockPod. But what you should do is head on over to the Aftershock Comics fan group on Facebook. What's the URL? Facebook.com/group/AftershockComicFans, I'm assuming?
Exactly, Aftershock Comic Fans.
God. See? Professional.
On spot. On point.
Head on over there and you can hang out with a bunch of Aftershock fans. We will do our best not to take off 5 weeks anymore. So there'll be an episode next week. I don't know if I'll do a solo or if we'll be here all together to talk about the 3 books. But there will be an episode next week. I guess that's it. Anything, any last comments?
No, I'm good, man.
Have a good night and go buy some Aftershock.